It's Thursday, July 3rd, and it's 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Well, good day, Stashers, and welcome to Thursday. We've got a special comedy-themed daily audio stash for you today. Joining us from Hollywood, California, will be Terry Joyce. You may remember Terry from Last Comic Standing. She was one of the Season 1 top 10 finalists on Last Comic Standing. And also, she's promoting a show called Hollyweed Live. Terry is going to be our cannabis comedy correspondent every Thursday, so she'll be bringing us new comedy from great comedians who support the end of adult marijuana prohibition. Also, we're going to be speaking with the associate publisher of High Times magazine, Rick Cusick, also the co-defendant in the Strop Cusick case for being busted for smoking marijuana at the Boston Freedom Rally. Mr. Cusick tells me that it's all Mr. Strop's fault because he was a bad influence. You hear that, Keith? Anyway, Mr. Cusick will be here speaking with us about how he got his job at High Times thanks to the influence of comedian George Carlin, who passed away, unfortunately, a couple of Sundays ago. So we'll hear that story from Rick about how he met George Carlin and how George Carlin helped him get his job at High Times magazine. Also, we've got some Pacific Northwest flavor musical break for you. A friend of mine named Corey B., who I met at one of our medical marijuana cardholders meeting, and a great song she has for us called Ganja Salute. All right, everybody, sit back and relax. Grab your favorite strain and your best smoking device. It's time for your normal daily audio stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Fresno, California to hold hearing on medical marijuana ID cards. The Fresno County Board of Supervisors will conduct a public hearing on the local implementation of the statewide medical marijuana identification card program, 9 a.m. Tuesday, July 8, in the County Board Chambers in the Hall of Records at 2281 Tulare Street. Although 40 California counties have implemented the program, including Merced, Tulare, Inyo, and San Benito, as well as Los Angeles, Orange, and Kern, Fresno has yet to act. To help educate the community about this and other medical marijuana issues facing Fresno, the Marijuana Policy Project will host a free screening of the award-winning medical marijuana documentary, Waiting to Inhale, followed by a panel discussion on Monday, July 7th at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church at 2672 East Alluvial Avenue in Clovis, California. Now, I'm coming at you from Oregon, where our medical marijuana law requires an ID card for all patients, caregivers, and I'm one, and growers. California has mandated that all counties offer an ID card program, but participation in the program is optional. I guess I don't understand why Californians would not want a mandatory statewide ID card system. Now, I hear the complaint, I don't want to be on some government list. Well, do you have a Social Security number? Then you're already on a government list. Now, I can't tell you how much of a relief it was the first time my caregiver card meant something to me. I was transporting two fairly bushy 4-foot plants to one of our cardholder meetings. They were covered with thin white plastic garbage bags, but with the light streaming through, you could kind of make out the silhouette of some fine Oregon cannabis. I looked into my rear view, and there was one of Portland's finest tailing me. I got that initial adrenaline rush all us stoners get when there's suddenly a cop driving behind you, especially when you're carrying ounces of ganja. Then I remembered, hey, I've got a caregiver card. If he pulls me over, I just show him my license, registration, insurance, and caregiver card, and I'm driving away scot-free. The panic subsided. The cop never did pull me over, but that feeling of relief definitely trumps any sort of paranoid thought I ever had about being on some government list. Orange County Normal to protest the U.S. Open of Surfing. Huntington Beach, California. Marijuana advocates plan to protest the U.S. Open of Surfing after they said they were denied a booth at the world-renowned competition. Officials with the Orange County chapter of the National Organization to Reform Marijuana Laws, or NORML, said they were refused a booth after being told by an organizer that the city and event sponsors did not support the group's message. The group advocates the repeal of marijuana prohibition and the use of medical marijuana. U.S. Open officials deny the accusation, stating that the refusal was purely a business decision. City officials said they have nothing to do with the granting of booths and denied any sort of say. About 100 people from NORML and supporters plan to picket the event on July 26th and 27th. James Leitz, executive producer of the U.S. Open of Surfing, said the group was denied a booth this year because he said they had misrepresented themselves last year, applying under the guise of another organization. Steve Lawrence, who put in the application for Steve's List, said that he spoke to an organizer last year and let her know that his website, www.stevelist.info, was dedicated to the cannabis patient community. The website is now defunct. Lawrence, a member of NORML, said he filled out the application truthfully and didn't think he had to include cannabis or marijuana on the document. Instead, OC NORML president Candace Hawes said a female organizer told her on several occasions that, quote, they called Huntington Beach and that they didn't want us there and didn't support our kind of organization and said that the sponsors didn't want us there anyway, end quote. Leitz denies the accusations, stating that he stands by the decision to exclude the group. Leitz said, quote, I myself personally have to worry about the 8-year-old kid. I have to worry about the message we're sending. I have to worry about the family-friendly atmosphere. I think OC NORML's message, or what have you, is vague. We just don't think it's appropriate for the family-friendly nature of this event, end quote. This is not the first time a NORML booth or NORML people have been excluded from public events. My own chapter and members here in Portland have been discriminated against too. Members who wanted to volunteer for NARAL, or the abortion rights group, were turned away, and Oregon NORML was denied when it tried to volunteer and sponsor the Susan G. Komen Race for the Cure, the breast cancer race. Shockingly, even our efforts to organize canned food drives at our meetings and then donate that food to the Portland Food Bank were refused. I guess they'd rather have poor starving kids go hungry another night than to accept free meals from, quote, potheads. Mr. Leitz wants to use that old, what about the children excuse? Well, certainly, we can't have kids exposed to a group that tells them citizens can organize to change ineffective prohibition laws, even if that challenge isn't socially popular. Nope, nope, we better keep the family-friendly atmosphere provided by such kid-friendly U.S. Open of Surfing sponsors as Corona Extra Beer. Rhode Island governor vetoes bill to study medical marijuana distribution. Providence, Rhode Island. Governor Don Carcieri has vetoed 22 bills, including those dealing with releasing public records, distributing medical marijuana, and expunging criminal records. The Republican governor vetoed the bills Wednesday and sent them back to the Democratic-dominated General Assembly. He vetoed a bill that would have created a commission to recommend a way to distribute medical marijuana to patients. Not a bill to create dispensaries, mind you, but a bill to create a commission to investigate potential methods of distributing medical marijuana. maybe not even dispensaries. Maybe they come back and recommend that there is no legal way to distribute medical marijuana. But the governor won't even let them investigate something to do with medical marijuana. Pathetic. The good news is that medical marijuana itself was passed by overriding Carcieri's veto, and the bill he just vetoed got substantial majorities in the Senate and Assembly. California Senate passes SJR 20 saying, "Feds, leave medical marijuana alone." The California Senate on Thursday approved a joint resolution calling on the federal government to halt crackdowns on licensed medical marijuana dispensaries. The resolution, SJR 20, was approved 24-15 and was authored by outgoing state senator Carol Migdon, Democrat from San Francisco. Migdon, who was defeated in her primary re-election bid last month by termed-out fellow Democrat Assemblyman Mark Leno, Democrat from San Francisco, said she believes the federal government's Drug Enforcement Agency has better ways of spending its time. Migdon said in a statement, quote, "I am incensed that the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency seems to have nothing better to do than waste drug-fighting resources running roughshod over California's state-authorized medical marijuana dispensaries for the sick and terminally ill," end quote. Migdon said that the non-binding resolution asks the federal government to respect California's so-called compassionate use marijuana statutes. In 1996, the state's voters approved Prop 215, which legalized the limited use and cultivation of marijuana as a physician-approved medicine. With the passage of Prop 215, California became one of a dozen states in the nation to legalize the use of marijuana for medical purposes. And of course, the federal government will grant this resolution as much respect as it has granted Prop 215, which is none. But a vote like this just shows that the elected officials in California are finally coming around to the will of the people and are standing to defend medical marijuana against federal intrusion.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Well, I'm very happy to be debuting a new feature here on the Daily Audio Stash. We're going to be calling it Cannabis Comedy with Terry Joyce from Hollyweed Live. And joining us from Southern California is Terry Joyce from Hollyweed Live. Terry, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
If you don't remember Terry, if you've seen the show The Last Comic Standing on NBC, she was a top 10 finalist in season, was it 1 and 3, right?
Yeah, I was on a season 1, and then we did a, it was a different version of the show for season 3. It was basically, and it got canceled, unfortunately.
Oh.
It was first season versus third season on the show.
So it was like a special, you know, martial arts battles with you and Dat Fan or something? Or
yeah, well, you know, Dat Fan was on my team.
Oh,
really, I wanted to kick his ass.
Okay. And let's tell the folks about Hollyweed Live and how they can catch that and what's it all about.
Hollyweed Live is a show that I put together. It's a variety show, and it's got music and stand-up comedians and a bit, and it's in support for the awareness and hopefully the changing of our marijuana laws. I actually have been working with an organization called the Patient Advocacy Network. We've joined forces, and I've been doing a lot of shows, fundraisers for that particular organization here in Southern California.
Now, I thought one thing that was very interesting about your story, and just fair disclosure to everyone, Terry and I met up here in Portland. She did a gig up here, and we got to meet and speak a little bit about this. So I already know a bit about the story, but you've been a stand-up comedian for a long time, but it was a specific incident that turned you into a cannabis comedian, or more specifically, a cannabis activist. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about that raid you went through?
Sure. And this is really interesting because what had happened was, I didn't have a car at the time. And I was doing a radio show for National Lampoon Radio. Because Jeffrey Peterson and I were doing the Dope Show, and we were bringing it up to Portland as well. This was like really right before we came to do the show at the Bad Duck Theater in Portland. What happened was I had done the radio show. A friend of mine gave me a ride to the radio show who works for a doctor who writes recommendations. And they were going to set up an office in a building that was the same building as what the dispensary was in. It was the same, it was like down the hallway. And so because of the fact that we kind of ran out of time, I had to go to work with him. And we went into the building, and we went into where the office was. I remember thinking, I have to go to the bathroom. I wonder where the bathroom is. And then all of a sudden somebody screams out, there's a raid. There's a raid. And I looked down the window, and it was very much like a TV show, like the SWAT team coming out,
Yeah.
They've got the bulletproof vest and they've got their guns and they're yelling at each other like this is like a really major, they're doing a really major drug bust, And I'm thinking, wow, but this is real. And I started to panic, of course, like, oh, what's going on? And basically what happened was is they came in, they broke down the doors, because the DEA never just knocks, they go, hello, we're here, we'd like to check things out, and then they gotta come in and make a big stance. They held us, at gunpoint. There was probably 6, 7, 8 of us, and, they had their guns on us, and we were on our knees, and, we ended up getting, handcuffed and interrogated, and they never read me my Miranda rights. They never said, you were under arrest. You have the right to remain silent. There's nothing like that. But they still quizzed me and I didn't realize that I didn't have to give them the information that I did. But, they asked me questions like, who are your parents? Where did they live at? Who are your roommates? What's their numbers? They took a picture of me, and kept it on file, which I went to go smile for the photo and try to make sure that they photograph the left side of my face because that's the most attractive side. And then the photographer goes, this is, oh, he wasn't the photographer because actually he was a DEA agent. I mean, you should never assume that he was a photographer. But he looked at me and goes, this is a serious picture. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then, because I didn't want to have like a bad celebrity picture.
one of those bad Nick Nolte type.
Yeah. So, that was interesting. And I mean, even when it happened, it was so surreal, it's like, when they're screaming out, it's a raid, and I had just smoked a little weed before I went in. I was like, God, what a freaking buzzkill. But whenever the DEA shows up and you're buzzed, that's just like a paranoid fantasy that just came true.
Oh no! So you're on your knees and cuffed with an automatic weapon pointed at you. How long did this last?
It lasted about an hour and a half.
Wow.
An hour and 15 minutes, an hour and a half, somewhere in there. And what was really wrong, they didn't have the guns on us for an hour and a half. I mean, once they had us all handcuffed and frisked and, all that kind of stuff, they wanted to look at our driver's license and see who we were. And I remember saying, that's not really my actual weight on the driver's license. I'm a little bit heavier than that now.
who isn't?
he's like, oh, they kept us for, I would say it was at least maybe like from like an hour and 15 to an hour and a half.
Wow.
Is what I believe. They took us, from the room that I was in, because I was in the doctor's office, and they pulled us into another room and kept us there for a while, and then we were, interrogated. The last question I had, and there was this one DEA agent, seemed like he was more in charge, and I swear to God, he looks like this comedian that I don't like, And it was like if this guy could have a doppelganger, this was it.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, wow, I knew I didn't like you. You're an FBI agent. And so he was asking me questions, and one of the questions he asked me, he says, at the time, I did not have my medical marijuana card. I do now. But I wasn't really illegal because I was never in the dispensary itself. I was in the doctor's office.
Gotcha.
And that's where they messed up. They held us at gunpoint in the doctor's office and not the dispensary.
I see.
But, you know, the police officer was asking me, he goes, or the FBI guy, he goes, do you have your medical marijuana card? I said, no, I don't. And he goes, so, do you smoke marijuana illegally? And, you know, I looked at him and I said, on occasion, yes. And he says, well, you know, that's the most honest thing anybody said to me today. Go ahead and check out.
Real, so no charges, no arrests, nothing like that?
No charges, no arrests. Nobody was arrested that day.
Wow. It seems to be kind of a standard operating procedure anymore. Well, they'll do the major raids, bust up the place, seize all the equipment and the money and the plants, but then never charge anyone.
Right.
And so this raid then has changed your life then. It's made you more.
It absolutely changed my life. This is what the people here in California want. This is what the people really want. And the federal government comes and mistreats us like that. I was really in shock. I'm very scared about our rights being taken away from us.
Yeah, it is something
and
we
definitely you just have to fight for it.
That's what I was about to say. Is we have to fight for it. It's up to us. Rights aren't given. You have to take them. You have to assert them.
See, my feeling is that, you know, marijuana was a really nice girl that got a bad reputation. You know what I mean?
Poor Mary Jane.
Seriously.
It's a shame. It certainly is. But, we're all fighting for this. And part of this, I really do believe, is the popular culture and comedy and music. And because this is the way we get the message out to people who might not listen to a policy paper or a headline or an arrest like that. But they'll listen to a joke. They'll listen to a song. So we really appreciate you guys out there making that difference. And you were telling me also something I thought was quite interesting about getting involved in the gay pride parade.
Yes. I've been working with the Patient Advocacy Network. And by the way, if anybody wants to check that out, go to www.cannabissaveslives.com. That's the organization that's here. It's an LA grassroots organization.
Okay.
And it's very homegrown. And yes, we did. It was pretty wild. We did it in about 6 weeks, actually, which is kind of it's a huge challenge to get a float up in 6 weeks, even if you haven't done one before. But we had a medical marijuana float. I think it's probably one of the first ones in history. And the theme for the Gay Pride Parade this year was pride. And our theme was cultivating pride.
Ah.
And so we took a 6-foot flatbed truck and took a couple of Christmas trees to make them look like they were two huge buds, LA Confidential and Purple Kush.
Nice.
And we had a whole garden floral scene where we had sexy people on the float dressed up like, you know, sort of a Priscilla Queen of the Desert version of a butterfly. And we had, you know, the queen bee. And I did a sort of a Marilyn Monroe-esque. I had a 1946 vintage bathing suit on with a huge joint in my hand and a marijuana wig. And I mean, a Marilyn Monroe wig, excuse me, and a watering can. And then, so I was the gardener, and it was my garden. And then we had a friend of mine she dressed in drag, like she had a mustache and a goatee. So it was a lesbian couple on the float.
Gotcha.
And we ended up, and this was astounding because like we weren't even sure if we were going to pull this off. It was like from week to week, it was like, is there enough money? Do we have the money? If we don't get the money this week for the materials, we're not going to be able to build the platforms. And you know, it just, I mean, I, you know, every day it seemed like there was, you know, challenges, even to the point like before we got to the parade route, one of the buds fell off the truck. And you know, when you lose a huge bud, it's not a good day. But what had happened was that we actually took one of the most coveted awards for floats. We got the butterfly award for the most creative and original float.
That is
in the parade. And of course we did, because we smoked cannabis when we thought of it.
That's right. Hey, if you've got some pictures of those floats, send them my way and we'll get them up on the website so everyone can check them out.
Sure.
And before we go, let's let everyone know what you're up to with Hollywood Live.
What I'm doing with Hollyweed Live, I just did a show a couple weeks ago for a elderly couple. Their name is Richard McCabe and Joanne Cates. They're in their 70s, and they were arrested for cultivation in San Bernardino County. And I did a Hollyweed Live benefit through the Patient Advocacy Network for them. I'm going to be doing another show. This is not a Hollyweed Live show, but on July 12th at the Castle Inn in Landers, California, they're hosting another fundraiser for them, and I'm going to go down and host the show with there'll be couple other bands playing. One thing that I am doing is there's another way of a fundraiser that I'm doing. It's called the Free Speech Show. And if anybody wants to check out the Free Speech Show, you can go to comedynation.com.
Excellent. And is there a website for Hollyweed Live?
Yes, there is. I'm at www.hollyweedlive.com. Although, if you do go there, I'm still building my site, so please don't judge it. It's, you know, it's getting better, but you know, it definitely needs to be updated.
Does it still
get on right away?
Does it still have the Statue of Liberty picture? That's the important part.
Oh yeah, yeah. You'll see the Statue of Liberty picture. I'm also on MySpace. I'm Terry Joyce on MySpace, and so if you're there, you know, give me a friend request. That's T-E-R-E and J-O-Y-C-E.
Well, you're pretty busy. That sounds like it. We'll have links to all of those websites up on our website at stash.normal.org. And Terry Joyce from Hollyweed Live is going to be our correspondent for Cannabis Comedy for every Thursday. So keep tuning back in on Thursdays, and you'll get to hear from Terry and other really talented comedians who are working to end adult marijuana prohibition. Terry, hey, thanks for joining us again here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Keith Straub, the founder of Normal. In all the years since 1970 that I've been fighting marijuana prohibition, I've learned that drug warriors love to confuse the public with statistics. Lately, they've claimed that there are more teens enrolled in drug treatment for marijuana than ever before. It's a statement that, while true, is intentionally misleading. What they don't tell you is that marijuana arrests have skyrocketed to over 800,000 arrests per year. They also don't tell you that we've gone from a few dozen drug courts in the 1990s to over 2,500 drug courts today. The kicker is that those drug courts sentence teens routinely to drug treatment for marijuana whether they need drug treatment or not. So they arrest more people for pot, require them to enter drug treatment, then claim the higher treatment numbers justify more pot arrests. It's an absurd proposition, but no more absurd than banning a plant. Learn the facts about pot. Visit norml.org today.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. G'day, Stashers. From our corner of the world comes today's artist, Corey B, and her musical hit, Ganja Salute. Corey B calls NoPo home, that's North Portland, Oregon, and she has been performing in and around the Portland area for more than 10 years as a member of a few popular Portland bands. Corey B., who is really Corey Bethune, has a very centered philosophy based on spreading a message of diversity and acceptance among humankind. On today's track, Corey steps out solo and center with some help on the mixing and backup vocals by Matt Riffey. A sweet bass line, some killer lyrics, and a little reggae round out Ganja Salute. I would march next to Corey B. any day. Why don't you join the Cannabis Army, too? You can visit Corey B's MySpace page through links at our blog at stash.normal.org, where you can also get a download of this song. It's Corey B. with Ganja Salute.
dysentery to join the military. World War III, it's time for me to let up my lid up and for me country. I treat you, make my sister who looks real cute. As she marches in permission, give me ganja salute. Me no want no ballad in no three-piece suit. To come to me country and take all me loot. Me no want no ballad in no three-piece suit. To come to me country, me country, me country, me country. Me have to fight for me ganja, me happy take a toot. It's time to fire up the weed. Now give me ganja salute. I don't know what I believe. I've been home on Christmas Eve. I don't know what I've been told. Life is worth much more than gold. Sound off. To fight for me rights, cause I know when I shoot. To fight for me rights, cause I know when I shoot. And then I saw just like we have to dip on for tunes. We keep everything on the console. Fire up a league. Now that we can't just make a soul jump. It's time to fire up a league. We keep everything on the console. Make a soul jump. Join the military. World War III, it's time for me to light up my head and fight for my country. Jamaican sister who looks real cute, touching marches and permission, give me ganja salute. I don't know what I've been told. Right with a ballad in a JP suit, to come to my country and take all my loot. And make a song just for the young.
Big old seed, man, I smoke every strain there is in town. From the super sticky green to the headache maxi brown, I smoke every strain there is around.
I know that I like it. I know that lots of people like it. So let's see what happens if you overdo it.
Do we have any pot smokers here today? Do we at all?
My name is Doug Benson, and I'm about to get super high.
The term medical marijuana, you've basically, you drank the Kool-Aid. Because there is no such thing as medical marijuana.
I'm going to smoke pot every day for 30 days.
And try to remember to film it.
And my movie's going to be called Super High Me.
Or Business as Usual. I haven't decided yet on the title.
I'm going to be hospitalized, I think.
Some people call it dope. Some think it smells like burning rope. I tell you, it relieves my mind.
Well, we're all still mourning the loss of one of the greatest comedians of all time, George Carlin, who passed away last Sunday. And we have been reviewing all of the stories on the newspapers and the evening news and such. And there was all sorts of great tributes. Jerry Seinfeld had a great one in the New York Times. But one that caught my eye came from the associate publisher of High Times Magazine. And we're joined by Rick Cusick, the associate publisher from New York City. And Rick, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I thought this was quite an interesting point that you had in your own personal remembrances of George Carlin. And basically, the title here was How George Carlin Got You Your High Times Job. So let's talk a little bit about that.
It's an amazing little story, personal story. It's told a lot around here at High Times, because when you work at High Times, when you get here, you get asked the same five questions over and over again.
Yeah.
And there, how do you get a job at High Times? Can I get a job at High Times? Do you guys sit around and smoke pot all day? Do you have any pot? And what's up with all the fake weed?
Okay.
Right? Now, the punchline to all this is one, luck, two, no, three, sometimes we stand, four, get out of here, and five, I have no idea. Now, this is something that we've been saying for a long time, but everybody always asks you, how'd you get your job at High Times, and can I get a job at High Times? The real answer is luck. That's how you get your job at High Times. But in my case, the luck had to do with George Carlin. Let's see. I really got to tell you, though, to start off, I wrote a piece for this on, it's on www.hightimes.com right now. And in it, I explain how I'm 54 years old. When I first started smoking pot 37, 38 years ago, I lived near New York City in New Jersey. And, we used to go into New York on Saturday night. And I used to go to a place called the Bitter End. And the Bitter End has changed a lot now. It's pretty big and serves drinks. But back then, the Bitter End had a no liquor license. It was a hole in the wall, literally. And it was a main stop for everybody that came into New York. When I was 16 years old, the very second, third, fourth time I ever smoked pot in my life, I went to go see George Carlin at the Bitter End. And back then, 1972, he was just at the top of his game. He was just turning from a mainstream comedian into the counterculture icon that we all know and love. And I was, like I said, second, third time I ever smoked pot in my life. Back then, you could smoke pot inside the club. And because they didn't have a liquor license, they served ice cream. So I'm like 16 years old, and I'm eating ice cream. And I'm stoned for the first time, second time in my life, and George Carlin is 8 feet, 10 feet away from me.
Wow.
Doing the best work he'll ever do. And I mean, you know, at the time I knew that was the funniest thing I ever saw. I was 15, 16 years old. I knew that was the funniest thing I ever saw. But what I didn't know then, it was the funniest thing I was ever going to see. You know, George Carlin for me was the funniest man in the world. And just before I got into the marijuana law reform industry, as it were, I was working for, about 10, 12 years ago, I was working for a First Amendment publication. We wrote stories about First Amendment issues. And when the publisher asked me if I wanted to interview George Carlin about his famous seven dirty words you can't say on TV, he had taken that all the way to the Supreme Court in 1997. This was 2007. I mean, this was 19. He went to the Supreme Court in 1977, and this was 1997, 20 years later.
Okay.
So I said, sure, and I got on the phone with George Carlin, and we were very similar people in a sense that we were both little Irish Catholic guys who were loudmouths, had to talk our way out of every fight we ever had. we were both pissed off at the Catholic Church. And we bonded on these issues far beyond the interview. We stayed on the phone and talked quite a long time. And for just a little while, a few months of my life, with George Carlin and I shared a couple of phone conversations. We were like phone buddies. And so I had printed the interview that the original magazine wanted me to do. But my daughter had just been born right then, and I was looking for work, and I was looking for money, too, and somebody had suggested they knew somebody at High Times. I said, why don't you call your buddy George up and ask him some pot questions? Now, George is a aficionado of marijuana. He always loved marijuana. And when I asked him if he would talk about marijuana, he said, sure. I told him I was going to give it to High Times. He said, sure. We did an interview. I sent it off, and it turned out that it was my first cover story. They actually put it on the cover. It was my first national cover story.
Wow.
Yeah, I was very lucky. I couldn't, you know, I thanked them enough. You know, it was a great thing. But it only was one paycheck, and it didn't pay the bills. And I had just had a child, and I needed to get a real job. So I was sending out resumes, and I saw this blind item in the New York Times. And it said, Counterculture Magazine seeks ad rep. And I had sold some advertising for a little magazine in New York. That's the friend of mine. The publisher was the one who knew the guy at High Times.
Hmm.
And her magazine folded. The little magazine I was selling for folded. She went to go work for High Times. So when the publisher, it was a blind item in the Times. I didn't know who I was sending it to. I just sent my resume and said that I worked for this little magazine, and I sent, it said Counterculture Magazine. I put the current issue of High Times proudly into that envelope. I sent it off, and little did I know I was sending the current issue of High Times to the publisher of High Times.
Yeah.
He opens it up, and he looks, and he sees George Carlin on the cover, and he sees this the guy who wrote George Carlin piece, and he worked for Shirley, who's the photo editor.
Oh.
He calls her into the office, says, "You know this guy?" He says, "Oh, yeah, he worked for me." He goes, "Can he sell ads?" He goes, "Yeah, sure, he's a good salesman." He goes, "Is he the kind of guy that could fit in around here?" And she said, "If anybody was ever born to work at this magazine, this was the guy." And now, that was about 10 years ago. And that has started off. I was an ad salesman, and then I became the ad director, and then I became the editor, and now I'm the associate publisher. It's blossomed into a career. And a couple of years ago, we had to get a quote out of George for something or other, and I called him up. We hadn't spoken for a few years. And I got the quote, and I said, and we caught up a little bit, and he said, "How you doing?" I said, "Well, I got a job." Last time I talked to you, I didn't have a job, and guess what? I got a job thanks to you. And I told him, and I said, "You know, this is the only time I ever needed money in my life, and this is the first time a good-paying job came along." I said, "You know, if it wasn't for you, George, my kid probably is going to go to college now because of you." And he was real quiet. And the thing about George Carlin, he's a real quiet guy. He wasn't real funny. He wasn't on when you were talking to him. And that's why he made such a good interview, because he talked about serious stuff. And there's this moment of silence, and he said, I said, "Thanks, George." Moment of silence again. He said, "You're welcome." And that's the only thing he had to say about it. But he was a very, as I said, a serious guy. And people at the end, you know, at the end of his career, he did some very dark bits. He did some very dark pieces.
Oh, yeah.
And when you talk to him about it, he saw his career in three distinct phases. There was the early mainstream bit when he was in Vegas, and he had a tie and short hair, and, you know, he did mainstream comedy. And that's where he learned his craft. That's where he learned how to be funny in a very professional way. And then when the 60s hit, and when he smoked marijuana with the guys in the pit and the orchestra, and when he took, he's by his own admission, when he took mushrooms and things like that, he looked inward and said, "This isn't the kind of comedy I want to do." And when I saw him in 1972 at the bitter end, that was that man who had transformed like a butterfly from what he was into what he became. And that was the beginning of the counterculture George Carlin that became very famous. And then in 1991-92, he's very specific. He said there was a New York Jam show, and he found what he said was his comic voice, because he found that he was censoring himself on a politically correct level. He wasn't saying things because he thought he shouldn't. You know, he said, you know, "You're supposed to feel about the environment. You're supposed to care about, you know, the starving people in Africa." And he goes, "And in an abstract way you do, but in a very real way, you know." And so he began to put that into his act. And he said, and I'm quoting, he said, "I found my comic voice." Hmm. So like many, many humorists before him, Kurt Vonnegut, Mark Twain, you know, at the end of his life, George Carlin turned out to be a very dark guy, you know, and it's almost like an occupational hazard for the humorist. You know,
yeah.
If you live long enough, you finally get the joke. and that's, I think, what happened to George.
Yeah. And you know, I think some of that comedy from the 92 on is some of my favorite George Carlin. And I think that from what, at least what I've read in people's remembrances of him, is that on a grand scale, looking at the grand scale of humanity, he had this dark tone. But on an individual scale, he's the most beautiful, caring, wonderful person you could ever meet.
As a matter of fact, there's an addendum that we just learned. As I said, I posted the story I just told you on hightimes.com, and somebody had read it and gotten to us and said, you know, "Lovely story." And then related to us that the issue with the interview with George Carlin, which is also on High Times right now, the issue with the interview back in 97 was her first issue of High Times. And she read it and picked it up because her favorite comedian was George Carlin. And when she read it, he talked about the dark side of his comedy and talked about, you know, where he was coming from. And she was a single mother with no money, struggling with a baby. And she had an incredibly positive outlook. And she hated the idea that George was so down on humanity. So she wrote a letter to George Carlin and sent it to High Times. And we forwarded it to George Carlin. We just got a letter from him. We had his address. We forwarded it to him. We didn't know what was in it. And that was the last we heard of it. That was the end of it. Last week, she got in touch with us and said about 2 months afterwards, she got a letter, and it was from George Carlin. The return address was from George Carlin. She opened it up, and inside was a small note, and it said simply, "I hope this helps." And there was 10 $100 bills in the envelope.
Mm, wow.
So he might have been a very dark man when thinking of humanity as a whole, but when somebody reached out to him in a human way, he was one of the most human, he'd give you one of the most human responses imaginable. Well, he was a really, really good guy. I mean, I got to know him a little bit on the phone, and we got to talking about things. And, you know, when you talk to somebody, there's always a nervous kind of laughter. Everybody's kind of making a little joke or something like that, you know. There was none of that with George. It was a very somber conversation. And you could feel like, you know, you could be as smart as you wanted to be with him.
Yeah. Yeah. He will be remembered. He will be missed. That's for sure.
Well, he's a giant in what he did in comedy, obviously. He's a giant culturally. He came at a time, as I said in my piece, it's when Lenny Bruce dropped the ball, George picked it up and carried it over the goal line. And beyond that, and you know, for people of normal listening to this, you got to remember he was a champion of the ability, you know, of people. Now he had some drug issues. He did too much cocaine. We all did too much cocaine back in the '70s and eighties. And I think at the end he had to get away from drinking and from Vicodin. I've had similar issues in my life, but marijuana has always stayed my friend, and I don't think he's ever had a bad word to say about marijuana. And he certainly, he said he liked to write when he was straight, and then take a few hits, and then punch up the writing.
Well done.
That's right.
All right. Well, we'll be remembering George Carlin. We encourage everyone to check out the piece up at hightimes.com and all the other George Carlin-related material that'll be up there. And we've been speaking with Rick Cusick, who's the associate publisher of High Times Magazine. Rick, thanks so much for your memories.
Thank you very much for having me. Anytime.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes. In our comedy context today, we bring you Bill Maher, the satirist and comedian, who said, quote, "Maybe people think they don't need to vote to change things. Take marijuana. Nobody in America who wants pot has any trouble getting it, so maybe that's why we aren't seeing support for legalization. People don't think it's necessary to legalize it because it's so easy to get it." End quote. Yeah, for most of us, we never ever have any problems with law enforcement or arrest, and so many times we don't think there is a problem. But we've got to think about those over 800,000 people every year who are arrested for marijuana charges and the indelible effect that has on them for the rest of their lives. Time to think outside of your own self and get involved with the end of adult marijuana prohibition for all of us. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. We bring you a special Daily Audio Stash tomorrow to celebrate America's independence. And until that time, take care of each other, Tokers.